the bird of the soul. While the body of the candidate lay in the stone sarcophagus, the soul, hovering in the air above it, assumed the form of a bird, and passing upward out of the crypt, through the vent or chimney of the planets entered into the presence of the Nat. Osiris, Lord of Decernit Souls. After remaining 3 days in the fields of Amenti, the soul returns to its body amidst the rejoicing of the priests. Chapter 19. Rosicrucian and Masonic Origins. Freemasonry is a fraternity within a fraternity, an outer organization concealing an inner brotherhood of the elect. Before it is possible to intelligently discuss the origin of the craft, it is necessary to establish the existence of these two separate yet interdependent orders, the one visible and the other invisible. The visible society is a splendid camaraderie of free and accepted men enjoined to devote themselves to ethical, educational, fraternal, patriotic, and humanitarian concerns. The invisible society is a secret and most august fraternity whose members are dedicated to the service of a mysterious Arcanum Arcanorum. Those brethren who have essayed to write the history of their craft have not included in their disquisitions the story of that truly secret inner society which is to the body Freemasonic what the heart is to the body human. In each generation only a few are accepted into the inner sanctuary of the work, but these are veritable princes of truth, and their sainted names shall be remembered in future ages, together with the seers and prophets of the elder world. Though the great initiate philosophers of Freemasonry can be counted upon one's fingers, yet their power is not to be measured by the achievements of ordinary men. They are dwellers upon the threshold of the innermost, masters of that secret doctrine which forms the invisible foundation of every great theological and rational institution. The outer history of the Masonic order is one of noble endeavor, altruism, and splendid enterprise, the inner history one of silent conquest, persecution, and heroic martyrdom. The body of Masonry rose from the guilds of workmen who won 434 LECTURESONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY dared the face of medieval Europe, but the spirit of Masonry walked with God before the universe was spread out or the scroll of the heavens unrolled. The enthusiasm of the young Mason is the effervescence of a pardonable pride. Let him extol the merits of his craft, reciting its steady growth, its fraternal spirit, and its worthy undertakings. Let him boast of splendid buildings and an ever-increasing sphere of influence. These are the tangible evidence of power, and should rightly set aflutter the heart of the apprentice who does not fully comprehend as yet that great strength which abides in silence, or that unutterable dignity to be sensed only by those who have been raised into the contemplation of the inner mystery. An obstacle well nigh insurmountable is to convince the Mason that the secrets of his craft are worthy of his profound consideration. As St. Paul, so we are told, kicked against the pricks of conversion, so the rank and file of present day Masons strenuously oppose any effort put forth to interpret Masonic symbols in the light of philosophy. They are seemingly obsessed by the fear that from their ritualism may be extracted a meaning more profound than is actually contained therein. For years it has been a moot question whether Freemasonry is actually a religious organization. Masonry, writes Pike in the Legenda for the 19th degree, has and always had a religious creed. It teaches what it deems to be the truth in respect to the nature and attributes of God. The more studious-minded Mason regards the craft as an aggregation of thinkers concerned with the deeper mysteries of life. The all-too-prominent younger members of the fraternity, however, if not openly skeptical, are at least indifferent to these weightier issues. The champions of philosophic masonry, alas, are a weak, small voice which grows weaker and smaller as time goes by. In fact, there are actual blocks among the brethren who would divorce masonry from both philosophy and religion at any and all cost. If, however, we search the writings of eminent Masons, we find a unanimity of viewpoint, namely, that Masonry is a religious and philosophic body. Every effort RosicrucianandMasonicorigns 435 initiated to elevate Masonic thought to its true position has thus invariably emphasized the metaphysical and ethical aspects of the craft. But a superficial perusal of available documents will demonstrate that the modern Masonic order is not united respecting the true purpose for its own existence. Nor will this factor of doubt be dispelled until the origin of the craft is established beyond all quibbling. The elements of Masonic history are strangely elusive, there are gaps which apparently cannot be bridged. Who the early Freemasons really were, states Gould in A Concise History of Freemasonry, and whence they came, may afford a tempting theme for inquiry to the speculative antiquary. But it is enveloped in obscurity and lies far outside the domain of authentic history. Between modern Freemasonry with its vast body of ancient symbolism and those original mysteries which first employed these symbols, there is a dark interval of centuries. To the conservative Masonic historian, the deductions of such writers as Higgins, Churchward, Vail, and Waite, though ingenious and fascinating, actually prove nothing. That Masonry is a body of an ancient lore is self-evident, but the tangible link necessary to convince the recalcitrant brethren that their order is the direct successor of the pagan mysteries, has unfortunately not been adduced to date. Of such problems as these is composed the angel with which the Masonic Jacob must wrestle through out the night. It is possible to trace Masonry back a few centuries with comparative ease, but then the thread suddenly vanishes from sight in a maze of secret societies and political enterprises, dimly silhouetted in the mists that becloud these tangled issues, are such figures as Cagliostro, Comte de St. Germain, and St. Martin. But even the connection between these individuals and the craft has never been clearly defined. The writings of early Masonic history is involved in such obvious hazard as to provoke the widespread conclusion that further search is futile. The average Masonic student is content, therefore, to trace his craft back to the workmen who chipped and chiseled the 436 LECTURESONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY cathedrals and public buildings of medieval Europe. While such men as Albert Pike have realized this attitude to be ridiculous, it is one thing to declare it insufficient and quite another to prove the fallacy to an adamantine mind. So much has been lost and forgotten, so much ruled in and out by those unfit for such legislative revision, that the modern rituals do not in every case represent the original rites of the craft. In his symbolism, Pike, who spent a lifetime in the quest for Masonic secrets, declares that few of the original meanings of the symbols are known to the modern order, nearly all the so-called interpretations now given being superficial. Pike confessed that the original meanings of the very symbols he himself was attempting to interpret were irretrievably lost, that even such familiar emblems as the apron and the pillars were locked mysteries, whose keys had been thrown away by the uninformed. The initiated, writes John Fellows, as well as those without the pale of the order, are equally ignorant of their derivation and import. See the mysteries of Freemasonry. Preston, Gould, Mackey, Oliver, and Pike, in fact, nearly every great historian of Freemasonry have all admitted the possibility of the modern society being connected, indirectly, at least, with the ancient mysteries, and their descriptions of the modern society are prefaced by excerpts from ancient writings descriptive of primitive ceremonials. Theses eminent Masonic scholars have recognized in the legend of Hiram Abiff an adaptation of the Osiris myth, nor do they deny that the major part of the symbolism of the craft is derived from the pagan institutions of antiquity when the gods were venerated in secret places with strange figures and appropriate rituals. Though cognizant of the exalted origin of their order, these historians, either through fear or uncertainty, have failed to drive home the one point necessary to establish the true purpose of Freemasonry. They did not realize that the mysteries whose rituals Freemasonry perpetuates were the custodians of a secret philosophy of life of such transcendent nature that it can be entrusted to only an individual, tested and proved beyond any possibility of human frailty. The secret schools of Greece and Egypt were neither fraternal nor political fundamentally, nor were their ideals similar to those of the modern craft. They were essentially philosophic and religious institutions, and all admit into them were consecrated to the service of the sovereign good. Modern Freemasons, however, regard their craft as neither primarily philosophic nor religious, but rather as ethical. Strange as it may seem, the majority openly ridicule the very supernatural powers and agencies for which their symbols stand. The secret doctrine that flows through Freemasonic symbols, and to whose perpetuation the invisible Masonic body is concessorated, has its source in three ancient and exalted orders. The first is the Dionysiac Artificers, the second the Roman Collegia, and the third the Arabian Rosicrucians. The Dionysians were the master builders of the ancient world, originally founded to design and erect the theaters of Dionysus wherein were enacted the tragic dramas of the rituals. This order was repeatedly elevated by popular acclaim to greater dignity, until at last it was entrusted with the planning and construction of all public edifices concerned with the commonwealth or the worship of the gods and heroes. Hiram, king of Tyre, was the patron of Dionysians, who flourished in Tyre and Sidon, and Hiram Abiff, if we may believe the sacred account, was himself a grand master of this most noble order of pagan builders. King Solomon in his wisdom accepted the services of this famous craftsman, and thus at the instigation of Hiram, king of Tyre, Hiram Abiff, though himself a member of a different faith, journeyed from his own country to design and supervise the erection of the everlasting house to the true God on Mount Moriah. The tools of the builder's asterisk craft were first employed by the Dionysian as symbols under which to conceal the mysteries of the soul and the secrets of human regeneration. The Dionysians also first likened man to a rough ashlar which, trued into a finished block through the installment of reason, could be fitted into the structure of that living and eternal temple built without the sound of hammer, the voice of workman, or any tool of contention.